This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. Now that the Mueller report is out, at least mostly, what do we know that wasn't well reported beforehand? And how should Congress make use of the evidence provided? Julian Sanchez, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, has pored over the report. He offers his thoughts.
It's actually surprising how much of the report had been public in dribs and drabs. It may be that the primary significance of this is, one, to get things all in one place, and two, to confirm things that had been reported maybe based on anonymous sources, but weren't the sort of thing that you could 100% count, take to the bank on the basis of that level of reporting. There are a fair number of new details on the obstruction end, new information about conversations that the president had with his associates, and a confirmation of orders to try and remove the special counsel or to get Jeff Sessions to de-recuse himself and rein in that investigation. On the sort of collusion or cooperation with Russia side, to the extent that it makes sense to think of those as different pieces, which I'm not entirely certain it does, the substance of a lot of it is stuff that's been in the press for months, if not years at this point. And the places where it looks as though there might potentially be something new are redacted. So in a way, what jumps out at me most from this is the number of things we still don't know, things that either Mueller didn't follow up as thoroughly as one might have thought, or that they weren't able to make a determination on either way, or things that are discussed but in a redacted form. And here I'm thinking specifically of sections that appear to pertain to Roger Stone's outreach to WikiLeaks, and which are redacted as potentially harmful to an ongoing matter if disclosed.
All right. So there was a lot of reporting, as you noted, on this, and a whole lot of this was reported at one point or another. How has much of that been called into question with this report?
No, I think what this mostly does is validate the bulk of the reporting on things that were going on relevant to the investigation, or leave them in question. This is part of the things that aren't in the report. There was a fair amount of reporting on the Mueller team being staffed up to look into the financial history, the ties between the Trump Organization and either the Russian government or Russian oligarchs with ties to the government, stretching back even before the election. There's not a ton, at least unredacted, that concerns that. It doesn't mean that they weren't looking into it. It just means that doesn't seem to have found its way into this section of the report, at least not in the quantity some of the reporting would have suggested.
So some the questions that remain relate to obstruction of justice and criminal conspiracy?
Right, and so this is, one of the things that I think is sort of problematic about our discussion in general is that we tend to see everything through the lens of criminal law. If you think of this from a sort of counterintelligence perspective, or a national security perspective, it doesn't necessarily line up neatly with things that that are federal felonies. If you think about this in terms of what kind of conduct, let's say, would make someone ineligible for a security clearance, what would make someone a security risk and therefore not eligible to access secret or top secret information, there's a lot of things in that category that are not crimes. And so this is a report that is for statutory reasons, because of the sort of the mandate of a special counsel, focused very much on decisions to prosecute or decline to prosecute, which means, instead of collusion, they're really talking about the crime of conspiracy to commit some other offense. And so they don't find that, or at least they don't find a case that they're prepared to bring to court. But from the perspective of sort of what, you know, do we have a picture here of a campaign that was accepting and happy to have and in a sense encouraging and looking to aid foreign assistance? You know, that's not a discrete crime, but I think the aggregate picture that comes out of this is that it does look like that. And because of the focus on criminal conspiracy, there are details that would be very significant and interesting to know with respect to sort of how aware the campaign was of the foreign assistance effort on their behalf that aren't pursued as fully as one might like. To my mind, a pretty critical piece of information is whether when George Papadopoulos, the former campaign advisor, was in London and seems to have been approached by effectively a kind of Russian cutout academic, notifying him that Russia had obtained thousands of emails related to Hillary Clinton. This was damaging dirt that would be helpful to Trump if exposed. And this is all well before the DNC hack became public, though after it had occurred. Was the rest of the campaign informed about that? Because it doesn't show conspiracy unless they agreed to something, unless there was a quid pro quo. You need an agreement for conspiracy. But it would put in a very different light all the subsequent actions of the campaign. If the campaign was informed, this kind of offer or preview had been made, then the subsequent sort of vehement denials that we could be confident Russia was behind this, that this was really a foreign hack and not an inside job or some 400-pound person in his basement, all of that looks very different if you think, well, the campaign had very good reason to know that those denials were not true. And that wouldn't necessarily make a difference with respect to whether there was conspiracy, but with respect to whether this is something that looks like a national security risk, whether it looks like you've got a campaign and a president effectively working to assist an electoral interference campaign, it does, I think, make a pretty significant difference. And that's a detail the report was never really able to pin down. It seems like no one quite recalled whether Papadopoulos had passed this piece of information on. He was working pretty vigorously to try and set up meetings with high-level Russian officials in the campaign. But whether this detail about the sort of hacked emails was passed on, no one seems to have a clear memory of. And there's a bunch of other places where, the report says they're not really sure why Paul Manafort, the former campaign chair, was sharing internal polling data with Konstantin Khilumnik, who was assessed to have ties to Russian intelligence, doesn't sort of rise to the level of a demonstrable conspiracy, but they're not entirely sure what was going on there. And they did find that Manafort seemed determined to lie to them a whole lot about those interactions. There's the outstanding questions with respect to how far Roger Stone's outreach to WikiLeaks went. Again, probably doesn't get you to the point of a criminal conspiracy. This is all sort of well after the hacking had occurred and when you've got an institution that's in the course of publishing things, but does go to sort of state of mind, willingness to accept this kind of help and to encourage it and to shield from consequences. And that's something that is significantly redacted in the report itself.
So to the extent that Robert Mueller wasn't able to establish things that he might liked to have established with respect to specific crimes, and yet it's inappropriate in some ways to view a lot of the behaviors here as necessarily criminal, to look at them through that lens. Right. What should the House do? There are many members of the House, Democrats specifically, who would like to see this president impeached. Mm-hmm. Is this report helpful or harmful to those efforts?
I mean, I think certainly, in particular, in the obstruction section, there's certainly I think enough here that at least opening hearings with an eye toward potential impeachment would not, I think, be difficult to justify. you know, I mean, part of this is, again, there are sort of sound First Amendment reasons why you might want to make it difficult for criminal law to reach a lot of the conduct described here. So, you know, if I publicly say, well, I think people are getting too upset about Russia. I don't think we know that they're responsible. And I'm lying if I secretly think, well, I bet they were responsible, but they're helping, you know, the candidate I like. There are good First Amendment reasons that you would not want to make it easy to make that a crime, you know, to kind of comment publicly on something in a way that maybe doesn't reflect the extent of my true suspicions. So, you know, it might be that even if that ends up sort of helping in some way a foreign campaign, we don't want to make that a criminalizable act. And yet it might be the kind of thing we're willing to say we don't find acceptable conduct from someone in a position of authority. The obstruction pieces, I think, are sort of the easiest to run with on this score, partly because they do refer to conduct in office, and therefore we're getting closer to the idea of high crimes, meaning not, you know, especially bad crimes, but misconduct of a particular type that is germane to having public power, crimes of abuse of authority. And that may be conduct that, again, precisely because it's abuse of authority, authority that someone's legitimately exercising, it's difficult to make a crime. Right? We have granted the president authority to make decisions about, you know, what the Justice Department will do or what officials will staff it. But that makes it, I think, sort of for that very reason, and as the report itself suggests, you know, they're not coming to a firm legal conclusion on obstruction, despite having presented a fairly detailed case for it, in significant part because they know they can't indict a sitting president anyway. You know, that's a pretty clear referral to Congress. The second half of the Mueller report is a not very disguised referral to Congress saying, here's the evidence, and I expect now Congress to make a determination on that. Whether there's sort of political will to go ahead with that is another story. A lot of Democratic leadership seems skittish about the idea of pushing forward and are happier to talk about healthcare approaching the next presidential election. But it seems unambiguous that Mueller's intent in that second half is, here's some evidence for conduct that I know I can't prosecute directly, and I expect Congress to make a determination about not whether it rises to the level of violating federal felony statutes, but whether it rises to the level of the kind of high crimes and misdemeanors that would make it appropriate to remove this person from office.
Julian Sanchez is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.